Violet Brown driving.
Now, it's time to talk Celtics.
Celtics come roaring out of the gate.
This is the Sports Hub Celtics Show with Gasper and Murray. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
The game on lock for sure.
The clock will hit triple zeros, and the Celtics, who enter Orlando without three offensive stars in their rotation, play their calling card on the defensive end and score a monster come-from-behind win tonight to start the road trip. The final score, Boston 109, Orlando 98.
It's great. You know, we've had really good teams. We've had really good players and staff that worked really hard, and you know, hopefully we can keep going. But, and the other thing is we've got ownership and management that lets us, you know, fumble occasionally too, you know, and not be great. So just appreciate where we work, and you know, it's nice, but you know, we'll just move on to New Orleans.
Welcome into the Sports of Celtics Show. Jim Murray, Chris Gasper, got Brian Robb, Boston Sports Journal alongside as well. And you at 617-779-0985. Celtics head coach Brad Stevens after last night's 109-98 win over the Orlando Magic as they begin this three-game road trip was asked about, hey, you now have 300 wins. And he downplayed that because that's what Brad Stevens does, and rightfully so. But it is nice to see this. I don't know what's happening over there, but it's nice to see this team turn things around considering the skid that they were on. Around this time last week, having lost three straight to Detroit, Milwaukee, and then last Saturday night at home to Phoenix, which I wish I was a little bit more bullish on on this show last week, Chris, because I had a bad feeling. I'm like, you know, I know they're home, but Ayton, you know, now back. He was coming off a 2020 game against the Knicks, and it was an ugly loss, 123-19. But since then, they have defeated LeBron and the Lakers on Martin Luther King Day. Hell of a win. We'll go back.
Best win of the season.
Hands down. Finally, you got your marquee win. There's no doubt now. There's no more talking. What's their big win of the year? Can we make a case for the game against Toronto on Christmas Day? Was it against Milwaukee the first week of the season? Now we know it's the ass-kicking that they gave to the L.A. Lakers on Monday, 139-107. They follow that up hosting a hot Memphis team. I think it was, 8-2 in their last 10 coming into that game with John Morant. Who's looking like rookie of the year in the NBA. They beat the bag out of that team on Wednesday night. It looked like Memphis had like greased the ball at one point. And credit to the Celtics defense for the
defense
way that they played.
Has been much better.
Way better, especially on the perimeter. And then last night they start this road trip with a win in Orlando, and they're shorthanded too. So a good team win considering last night they didn't have Jaylen Brown, they didn't have Jason Tatum, they didn't have Enes Kanter. It's been one of the underlying themes of this whole season, Chris, is they can't get the whole team together at the same time. It's seemingly impossible. Someone's always dinged up. So talk a bit about this week, what you've seen, what has changed, because it does feel like there's almost been like a mentality change,
yeah,
at least defensively for this team since that skid of and the ugly ball that they were playing for last few weeks.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they had lost 6 of 8 going into that Lakers game, and the way they play, they handed the Lakers, who have the second best record in the league, their worst loss of the season, and they just dominated that game. And I think a lot of it was at the defensive end. I mean, 9 turnovers. They forced in the first half of that game. I thought they got the Lakers off their game. They got the Lakers uncomfortable, particularly in the half court, and the Lakers were fumbling the basketball a little. And then offensively, I thought that was the best game that we have seen from the triumvirate of wings, from Tatum, Brown, and Hayward together. You know, it seemed like they were all sort of clicking. They were all making an impact, and we haven't seen a lot of that this year, and it's still one of the big questions about this team. It's not a talent question. It's how does the team look when all of those guys are healthy? And is there a way that the team can consistently get all three of them functioning at a high level on a night-to-night basis? Or is that just not in the cards? Do they just not fit that way? And so I think you really saw sort of the best-case scenario for the Celtics in that Lakers game against a very, very good Lakers team.
So that begs the question here, what to do, is we're now 12 days from the trade deadline. And I said yesterday to open up Felger and Maz on Agenda Free Friday. You're already starting to see the columns pop up. There was one on Boston.com yesterday. I know CelticsBlog.com had this. Why you can't trade Gordon Hayward.
Kanter said it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
He said Chris Forsberg.
Yep. Who'll be joining us in the next segment. But he has his Enes Kanter podcast. He does NBC Sports Boston, talks about how good that Gordon Hayward is in the locker room, and people really don't get it. On the Boston.com article, they point out that the trade market isn't all that good. They're the three reasons why you can't trade Gordon Hayward, according to Boston.com. The trade market basically sucks. His offensive versatility and, of all things, his defense, sure. And I get it. If you want to argue for him, look at the way that he's played this week.
The way he played last night.
The way he played last night over these last three games. that are all wins. He's basically averaging like 21, 22 points, around 7-8 rebounds. But this to me reeks of like these scoring spurts that he has, Chris. It's inconsistent, and I think it's all a matter of time before there's going to be another drought. That's the reality with Gordon Hayward and why they should be looking to move him. And more than anything else, the one thing that sticks in the back of my mind, since he's the one that's been talking about it and why they should be looking to move him, he's dealing with a nagging foot injury that he keeps telling everyone it's an issue. That's going to continue to be an issue. And anytime he gets dinged up, he kind of turns into a head case. And last year, you theoretically could have moved on from the head cases you had there, whether it was Kyrie or Terry Rozier, and Danny Ainge didn't do that. He stood pat. He mismanaged those assets. And it was obviously a terrible year. And I don't think he should make that mistake again. So if you want to see Brown and Tatum be at their best like they were on Monday, and I think Brown is their best overall player, and you want to see them get to the level that I think that they can get to, and those are your two young building blocks, well, you got to try to free up that logjam a little bit. I think that Ainge should be willing to shop him here in the next 12 days.
I mean, I would be willing to do it, but then you have nights like last night and you see what he can be when they put the ball in his hands and they let him facilitate, and just how effective he was in that game as a facilitator. And the question is, can they get to a place where he has the ball enough to be able to do that when all four guys are healthy, when it's Kemba and Gordon Hayward and Tatum and Brown? And I don't know if that's more about Hayward or if it's more about the development of Tatum and Brown as being guys who can affect the game when they don't have the ball in their hands, or guys who get better at finding opportunities to score without sort of having the ball and being able to initiate that way. It's interesting. I mean, really, we're sort of burying the lead, because I think the lead with the Hayward thing really is that the Celtics have come to a point where they've realized that they don't want to move Marcus Smart like at all. Because Marcus Smart would be the guy that would make the most sense from a salary matching standpoint, I think, if you were going to move. But they feel like he's too vital to this team and too important. And so now you turn to Hayward. And I would look and see what's out there for Hayward. I think if you could bring in, because even though the guy you acquire might be less talented and probably will be less talented than Gordon Hayward, I think that overall you could have pieces that fit together better, and you could be a better team if you're able to find some sort of substantive big man, young big man that you can build around. But see, those guys are really hard to find. And I think that's why you're seeing a lot of these articles saying don't trade Gordon Hayward, because they're like, well, don't trade him for a rent-a-center who really has no upside. But would I trade him for, say, Miles Turner? And you have to do some salary matching there, because Turner only makes about $18 million. But would I ship him out for Miles Turner? I would.
I would, too.
Because I think that makes the team better in the long run.
And I think the fear should be as well, in terms of his opt-in. Like, if he opts in, I think you got to be concerned about that foot that he keeps talking about. That is this is an effect of that horrific injury that he sustained in that first night that he first got here, when he smashed that ankle up in Cleveland.
Who threw that alley-oop?
That would be Kyrie. That whole thing is going to continue to be an issue. So I that contract has already been looked at as an albatross, and I just think it will continue to be so going forward. I know he's been good, and I can understand.
He has been really good.
I can understand the argument for him, but I just think you'll be better served moving on from Hayward. I really do, and it's something that should be considered over the next couple of weeks. Where do you fall on this, Brian Rubb, covering the Celtics for Boston Sports Journal? Are you, no, you can't trade Hayward, they're better, they have a higher ceiling with him, or should Danny Ainge be looking to shop him?
You definitely test the market. Miles Turner available? Absolutely. I don't think anyone is going to be available that makes this team better this year. And I'm at a point with this team now, Jim, after this week they've had. If they didn't turn around this week, then it'd be a bigger conversation. But that win against the Lakers kind of showed us something, I feel like. So I'm at a point where, okay, you guys have earned one run together here. Like, see if it works or not this postseason. Get the complimentary pieces here to help you guys, and then make a bigger decision in the offseason. If you opt in there, do we trade him at that point? But I think at this point, it's worked well enough now where you roll the dice.
Obviously, a lot of talk of adding a big. We need a big. And Willie Cauley-Stein was one of those names thrown around. I know that was someone that Jimmy Stewart, executive producer of of the Felger and Mazz show, is like, he's like, Willie Cauley-Stein, that's a guy that they should be after. He goes for basically nothing. A second-round pick is useless in the NBA. But he goes from the Golden State Warriors to the Dallas Mavericks, just a 2020 second round draft pick. Again, that's nothing.
A late one, too.
Yeah, should the Celtics have been in on him?
I don't think so. He's not enough, is he better than Rob Williams?
Right?
Yeah, he can't shoot. It's like, you have Rob Williams already. Cantor and Tice are playing great. Are you going to be able to play him against Embiid? No. So what's the point?
Yeah, I just don't. with his lack of shooting ability, I just don't see what the fit was. Like, I saw a lot of people, including Jay Stu, lamenting about this on Twitter yesterday. Like, oh, boo, no, the Celtics should have been in. Like, I don't know, for what Brad Stevens does offensively, and everyone's going to shoot, and you've got to be able to shoot, especially from the outside. Well, Willie Cauley-Stein can't do that, so I don't get it. I don't know why people were so pissed.
Yeah, I think people are probably just looking for a little more length and maybe a little more athleticism. And there, I mean, I do think that's something that they need, but you know, I'm okay with them passing on Willie Cauley-Stein. I mean, let me throw another one out there to you, and I'm just curious how you guys would feel. But what would you move Hayward for? And again, this gets complicated with salary matching because it's never this simple. There's other guys you have to give up. But like, would you move him for like Clint Capella?
Yes.
No. But it's close.
It's close. I mean, I'm with B-Rob. I probably would not. I'm not the biggest Clint Capella fan. But to me, at least, if someone is arguing that the team needs more rim protection and length and athleticism from that spot, then at least a guy like Capella, he's in the upper echelon of guys who provide that type of player. We can argue about the value of that type of player. We can talk about the ceiling of that type of player, the limitations of that type of player, whether you need to bring in that type of player or you should in today's NBA. But if you're going to do it, then at least bring in somebody who is one of the better prototypes of that type of player. And I think Capella is.
All right. Well, we can argue whether or not the Celtics should be looking to trade Gordon Hayward. I am yes on that. These two also feel like the call should be made. See what could be out there. So if you want to weigh in on that, 617-779-0985. But I think one thing that is inarguable is they should be looking to shop that Memphis pick. We'll talk more about that with Chris Forsberg of NBC Sports Boston next here in the Sports Hub Celtics Show.
Here. He's
going to
pull up and shoot a three. Got it.
This is the Sports Hub Celtics Show on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
It's one of the reasons why I am part of this team is that I can do a lot of different things, and when asked to do whatever it is, I try to do my best at it. So if that's scoring on a different night, if that's facilitating, if that's playing defense, rebounding, whatever it is, I try to do it to the best of my abilities, try to just make winning plays for us.
Gordon Hayward with the 22 points in the Celtics win over Orlando last night. Sports Hub Celtics Show, 98.5 The Sports Hub. And joining us via the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline, it's Chris Forsberg, covers the Celtics for NBC Sports Boston. Good afternoon, Chris.
What up? What's going on?
Not too much. Before we get to your thoughts on what the Celtics should do with the Memphis pick leading into the trade deadline, what do you think that they should do with Gordon Hayward, because there's a lot of people coming out now with columns over the last few days, like, you can't trade Hayward. Nope, got to keep Hayward. Hayward's got to be part of this thing if they're going to reach their ceiling. I'm on the opposite side. I think that Danny Ainge should be shopping him. Where do you fall on this?
Well, I can understand your side, right? Like, there's a little bit of uncertainty about what happens after this season, and I think I've said it here before that, you know, if you're even, like, partially concerned that he's going to opt out of his deal and he's not part of your future, that you have to at least consider what's out there on the market. But I think they must have some sort of sense about, you know, what his future is, whether they see him as a key piece of building with Jalen and Jason and Kemba. So without knowing like exactly where they stand, it's a little bit harder to determine, but certainly I think you gauge it. I mean, I don't think regardless of the situation, Danny Ainge is going to see what the market is going to dictate for a player. And, ultimately, I don't think you're going to get the value that if Gordon Hayward plays to his potential, that would give you. Like, when people throw around the whole Steven Adams for Gordon Hayward thing, I want to just, like, smash my head against the wall because I don't think that helps you upgrade at center, and now you're taking one of your best perimeter players away. I don't think the ceiling of your team goes up with a move like that. I think people fixate a little bit too much on the idea that, well, you've got four stars, you need a fifth guy on the court. Sometimes you just need a Daniel Tice or an Enes Kanter to sort of get through. And so unless you could turn Gordon Hayward into someone who better fits with this team, I just don't see the need to be like running around trying to trade him.
And speaking of Kanter, you know, you do the Enes Kanter show, NBC Sports Boston, and you talked to him about Hayward, and he talked about and explained just how valuable Hayward is to this team and what a locker room presence he is. Were you a little surprised in the way that he talked about him?
Well, no. I mean, part of it, too, is like Kanter's a really good teammate, and he's going to talk up all of his guys, and he has a relationship with Gordon dating back to when they played together in Utah. But I do think, you know, a lot of Gordon's value is that he doesn't need to sort of be the guy who goes out and scores 20 points a night. He is content to set those other guys up. I do think you need a little bit of that balance. And in the same regard, it's what makes Kemba great too, right? Like that there are nights where Jason Tatum's got it going, Kemba's okay to just defer, and that Gordon's okay with just being able to break down a defense and kick it out to one of those open shooters. Or like last night when he got the double team on the wing and he zips a ball across the court to Ojale. It's like, you know, Gordon's value goes probably beyond what the basic stat line says. And I know everyone sort of looks at the contract and goes, well, why isn't he scoring 20-plus points per night? And, you know, his role on this team isn't that, and it's not what it was in Utah. And so I don't know necessarily, like, you know, what is the locker room side of it is. I think guys respect him. I think he's probably more of an example guy than sitting there and screaming at guys and telling them what to do. But certainly I think it goes beyond the stat line with Hayward.
Chris, you know, who do you think is closer to being the real Celtics, the team we've seen the last three games or the team that lost 6 of 8? And within that 6 of 8, there were two huge Thursday night losses and big games on the road against Philadelphia and Milwaukee, the teams that I think are really their primary challengers in the East.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I think it's encouraging that you were able to tighten your rotation and what feels like the one game you've been completely healthy to go out there and sort of weather the storm against the Lakers and then really dominate from after that first little 2 or 3 minute stretch there. I mean, that's encouraging, but also, you know, I'll throw in the caveat that Anthony Davis was coming off a bruised butt. LeBron certainly had his deal with zipping back and forth from Springfield. And I don't know how much that played into the what happened at night, but like, if you want to sell me that the Lakers weren't exactly as fully engaged as they could have been, then I'll buy that. But, you know, I thought the win over Memphis was even more encouraging because they were down a guy. They still sort of maintained their energy level and played really encouraging. Even last night, I thought was a nice win just because, you know, when they had that real bad lull in the first half. But certainly, like, when you start thinking about what this team can accomplish, you know, Philadelphia is just a terrible matchup for them because of the size issues they present. And, you know, I think you're a little bit more optimistic that you match up with Milwaukee, even though it's crazy to say that on a team that has Giannis. I do think that the Celtics can at least hang in that matchup. But I like, if they're playing, a lot of things have to go right for the Celtics to be a legitimate contender to come out of the East and to push those two teams. You know, you need everybody clicking at the same time. You need everybody to be healthy. And like, none of those things have happened or at least for long stretches this year. And yet they're still in good position. And so, I do think they're maybe one piece away. I keep saying, like, I think they need a little bit more shooting off the bench. Another guy you can lean on when you have all these injuries. But if Danny Ainge adds to this roster and gets that other piece before the trade deadline, you know, maybe I'll be a little bit more bullish on what they can accomplish come the playoffs.
Let me ask you about that. Let me piggyback off of that. Who are some of the guys, if you were Danny Ainge, that you would target? And, you know, what do the Celtics have to offer to get guys? Are you willing to give up players on the roster, or would you be looking more at giving up, say, their own first-round pick, which figures to be in the 20s, and then the Milwaukee pick, which, you know, could be the last pick really in the first round? I mean, I'll just throw out some names of guys I like, and you can throw out your names, but somebody like Malik Beasley in Denver, mm-hmm. that might be on the outs a little with Michael Porter playing well. Malik Monk had a really good game with the Hornets last night. They have Dwayne Bacon in there and a bunch of young guys. You know, somebody sort of that ilk, maybe a young guy with some upside that needs a little more opportunity and can shoot a little bit would be good in my book.
Yeah, I think what I'm typically targeted is like a guy with some size, like a 4 who can shoot with size. And B-Rob can tell you, I was sitting there when Phoenix was in town screaming about Dario Saric every time he touched the ball and made something happen. I just think that's sort of the kind of guy that can give you a little bit of a presence off the bench, fill the need where they need some size and kind of a little bit of versatility that can guard, you know, again, bigger 3s and 4s, who give you that shooting. You know, I don't know. It's tough to make a deal because Boston's bench assets don't carry a lot of value. You know, I think we'll get to this, but, you know, that's part of the reason that I would be okay with moving the Memphis pick if you had to go that far, depending on the right player. You know, I know a lot of people sit there and say, oh, my God, like, you know, Memphis pick. But, you know, that value has plummeted, and now you're talking about potentially either late lottery or mid-teens pick. And, like, if you could go get someone that not only could help you this year but maybe is part of your future, because – with the capped out situation that the Celtics have, it's going to be moves like this to go get a guy and then either using their rights to resign them and keep them longer You know, if there's the right situation out there, I do think you need to try to use these draft picks. Certainly start with the idea of trying to use the later first round picks of your own in Milwaukee and second round picks and all that. But if in the right situation, I think you have to be willing to at least put that pick on the table. If it's someone who can help you beyond this year.
Yeah, I know Gasper here probably was reading your column this week. You know, heading into that midweek game against Memphis, you write how that Grizzly pick is becoming increasingly as valuable because Ja Morant's a stud and that team's now in playoff contention. Gasper's reading this thing saying, told you, idiots. But
completely.
But should Danny, like, should he sell on this thing now? Because it just feels like it's getting less valuable by the game.
Right, and so I guess the hard part is that, okay, you get the sense that New Orleans now with Zion, and we'll see this on Sunday, they've got a little bit more energy, they've got a chance to surge for that eighth spot. You think the Spurs are going to be there. It feels like the Grizzlies will probably end up in the lottery, late lottery, with the new flatter odds. You know, you're talking about maybe something like 12 to 16% chance it's going to bounce up into the top four. And sort of roll over into next year. And there is, as crazy as it sounds, like, I know that's minuscule odds, but if it gets to unprotected, you just don't know what happens. Like, no one thought that having the Golden State Warriors first round pick this year would be a great thing, and yet injuries happen. So there is something to the idea that if you have a chance at an unprotected pick, you do have to sort of protect it and try to, you know, because it could be extremely valuable. And yet, I go back to it, the more likely than not, it's going to be somewhere in that 10 to 16 range. And as much as I think Celtics are bullish on Romeo Langford, we saw what happened with the Kings pick. It slid all the way to the end of the lottery. You know, Romeo could turn out to be a very nice player for them, but he's nice. Like last night, you're sitting there and he's up in Maine and he's not even with the parent club as it's thinned out. And so it's a long waiting game. And those guys are going to be valuable because of the situation the Celtics have, where the top of the roster is so expensive that you're going to need young guys to develop. So those draft picks can help you sort of navigate going forward. But, you know, again, if you can find a guy that you think fits your team that can help you, I just think, you know, they've already missed the opportunity to cash in at its peak value. And so now you're just sort of, you've got to examine what's the best way to maximize it moving forward.
I want to ask you this quickly, Chris. Is there any thought with the Celtics of holding on to this pick? Because you raised a good point about the idea. You never know what could happen. Maybe Ja Morant gets hurt, whatever. And is there any thought of holding on to this because Danny has his eye on whoever the new Anthony Davis is, whether it's Karl Anthony Towns or Bradley Beal or something like that, where they just want to have this in their holster just in case somebody gets disgruntled with their team and things break right for them and it turns out this Memphis pick, you know, is now somehow trending to be a top 5-6 pick in what is expected to be a much stronger draft next year?
Yeah, and I think sometimes you just have to roll the dice on that. And listen, they got burnt already with Sacramento. It might happen again, but I don't think it's the end of the world that if you play those odds and then you get there and it ultimately turns out to be the 13th pick, you just hope you trust your scouting to hopefully go find someone that can help you down the road. But then you do have the flexibility where if someone like that became available, and certainly as their sort of future draft stash becomes diminished here, like we just sort of have sat here for years saying, oh, it's a treasure trove. They've got all these Nets picks and Sacramento pick, and well, the well's running a little bit dry. It's time for them to start kind of replenishing that. So I can see them sort of erring on the side of caution there. But you know what? Like, I think there's a lot of teams out there that would like to have three first-round picks to sort of maneuver if something came up. And while they're not the greatest of picks right now, like, at least they have the option to get their hand in any of those deals if something did come up.
Pumped to see Zion in action tomorrow night?
I am. We weren't going to go down there, and then, you know, like, he comes back, and I mean, it's just going to be electric. I'm really excited to see what it's like down there. I mean, all those years they had Anthony Davis, and, you know, I don't know if that arena was exactly bopping with energy. I expect it to be crazy down there tomorrow. That's going to be fun.
All right, enjoy it. Chris Forsberg, NBC Sports Boston, comes to us via the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. Thanks for taking the time, Chris.
Get those beignets, thanks, Chris.
Oh, I'm right as I land. Later, guys.
Take care. Thanks. It's, again, Chris Forsberg, NBC Sports Boston. Make sure to give him a follow on Twitter. And always check out his work on NBC Sports Boston. All right, to your calls we'll go. And I want to go back and talk a little bit more about that Lakers win, the win of the Lakers, rather, or earlier in the week as we continue the Sports Hub Celtics show here on 98.5 of Sports Hub.
It's an hour dedicated to your Celtics. Chris Gasper, Jim Murray, the Sports Hub Celtics show on 98.5 of Sports Hub. Excitement is building for another banner.
Round for three, got it.
The Sports Hub Celtics Show on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Jaylen Brown catches, drives left side, elevates over Danny Green and throws it down hard with two hands, and Frank Vogel has to call a timeout. It happened out of nowhere, and it's not the first time tonight the Celtics have caught the Lakers on an inbound.
Excuse me. What you miss here is LeBron James got dunked on. He got his sandwich picked and taken. Take that, the king.
Just being aggressive and just made a play at the rim. I ain't gonna lie, though. It was pretty nice. It was pretty awesome.
All right, I want to go back to earlier in the week, this big win over the Lakers, which I'll readily admit I have egg on my face going into that game, especially after they lost to Phoenix last Saturday. I was like, they're going to get killed, the Lakers, in this game, and they didn't. And it was the best win of the year, and Tatum was awesome. They were all awesome. Cantor was great in that game. It was their best win of the year, hands down. And all great, and they've since, you know, looked like a different team over these last few games on this three-game winning streak that they've been on, including that game. But I can't help but be a little bit annoyed, Chris. It's a Sports Hub Celtic show. Jim Murray, Chris Casper, and you, if you want to join us, we'll go to your calls in a minute, 617-779-0985. I can't help being annoyed because, well, where the hell's that been? You know, because the team's mostly sucked for like the 2.5-3 weeks leading into that. And it just felt like, oh, well, especially defensively, like, oh, huh, you couldn't have put this together.
Well, they did have that film session, though, on Sunday that a number of writers wrote about. B-Rob, I think you wrote about it as well. A couple of people wrote about where it seemed like it really, in Brad Stevens, in his own way, sort of took those guys to task by really pointing out the mistakes and forcing guys themselves to point out the mistakes. And I think the biggest thing you've seen is a recommitment on the defensive end. And with a young athletic team like this, Jim, I think it's great when they play this type of defense, because if you think about the Celtics and their philosophy, you know, we've talked about them being the Warriors, but really where they sort of want to be the Warriors is on defense, with sort of positionless defense, this idea that all these guys can guard multiple guys. And we hadn't really seen a lot of that. And I thought you saw more of that against the Lakers.
All right, Tom in Newton, you're next here in the Sports Hub Celtic Show. Go ahead, Tom.
Yeah, hey, guys, got a quick Celtics thought for you. I mean, it feels like every single year, you know, or maybe not last year with Kyrie and everything, but we tend to have a similar conversation about the team, which is that, you know, they're a few fries short of a Happy Meal. They need another big, another superstar. They just need that extra piece to kind of be the team they need to be and match up where they need to match up. And, you know, not to take blame away from the team when they, you know, don't play well, but just the overall league environment, the big picture. I mean, Boston's just not a place where guys want to be in terms of their brands and their entourage and everything. And so it just sort of feels like every year it's kind of, you know, you either have to, you know, back up the Brinks truck or really strike it rich in the draft. It's just all that much harder to get the guys in here to be the team that they need to be. And it just kind of feels like every year it's kind of a similar struggle. What do you guys think? Thanks.
Well, I think the allure going forward is that, you know, Tatum and Brown are your building blocks, and those are going to be two of the great, you know, it's one of the great young duos in the league. And the guys are going to want to play with them. And the Brad Stevens factor, if you still think that that's a thing, which I think it is to an extent, maybe not as much as it was the last couple of years. But that's it. Oh, no, but in terms of, like, coming here for a destination, yeah, we're not Miami, we're not New York, and it's certainly not L.A., and there's not a lot here for in terms of marketability and, you know, having your brand out and trying to meet, like, young hot starlets. Or hung starlets.
Yeah. Well, some people might be into that, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, our winters here are just, you know, the best. Eight months of gray weather.
Like today.
Yeah. It's just, yeah, every day looks like today. Like, you know, like that's such a draw for young players in the NBA.
But, I mean, you say that, though, and we've said that for years, and I agree with you, but, I mean, they've done pretty well.
They really have.
Al Horford, I hate the sort of, you know, as much as people here mock the Colts for that AFC finalist banner, it's like we should put up a Kevin Durant finalist banner in the Garden as much as people talk about it.
We're number two.
Kevin Durant, free agent finalist. But, you know, they have done pretty well. Kyrie wanted to come here. He didn't shut it down. So there is an appeal. It's a different appeal than those other spots, but there is an appeal. And if the team keeps winning, I think it will continue to have some sort of appeal to a lot of guys.
You know, we did this on Felger and Maz this week, you know, talking about like who are the best young duo or who is the best.
Oh, yeah,
young
let's
duo
do this. I'm down for this.
In the NBA. Who is it to you? Because, I mean, star, you really do. And you look in the star power, you know, and that you can include Middleton and Giannis. You know, the star power throughout the league really is something right now. And you see what they got going on in Memphis. Who is it to you?
This is tough because you guys were naming duos. I think Brown and Tatum are up there. But to your point, I think you said this, too. It's like if you gave me a Cozy and Luka Doncic, I'd say that's number one.
That's number one for me.
And, I mean, and seriously, it's, a warm body in Luka Doncic.
Doncic and Porzingis, but Porzingis hasn't been the same player since he's gone to Dallas. No. But as I said on the show, you give me Porzingis, you can give me Doncic and a mannequin, and I'm, that's number one because that kid is a stud.
Yeah, I agree. No, I'm with you on that. I would probably go after that Embiid and Simmons.
Yeah, I'm still not that high on Simmons. No. I think Brown is an overall better player, and Embiid, and I get it. And but Embiid, and there's a inherent bitchy factor to
Embiid. But Embiid's
kind
of a unicorn, man. There's not a lot of guys like that at his size that can do what he can do. And you know, he's not always engaged, and sometimes I think he's too goofy for his own good. He needs to take it more seriously. But he's just, I mean, you're not going to find a lot of Joel Embiid's out there. Same for Simmons. My God, if Simmons could just make a 16-foot jump shot, it wouldn't even really be a debate.
It shouldn't really be a thing that you're asking a player that got drafted that high to do in the NBA, but that is the case. Raphael in Brockton on a potential of a Gordon Hayward trade. You're next here on the Sports Hub Celtics Show. Hey.
Hey, what's going on? Hey, listen, I'm in agreement with Murray in terms of trading Gordon Hayward. Now, there's somebody that you guys haven't really spoke about, but I think he would fit in a couple of areas. And the Celtics need the size. They need somebody that can actually battle the Embiids and the Giannises. But they need a little bit more of an edge. Now, the thing is, they're a team full of nice guys for the most part, barring Marcus Smart. They need another big version of Marcus Smart. Now, the guy that I would think of in terms of salaries that would match would be Hassan Whiteside. He has the size. He has the temperament. Brad Stevens can actually coach him. And Marcus Smart can actually, like, tutelize him to make sure that he's somebody that fits into what they can do. What do you guys think about that?
Yeah, that's an interesting one. I mean, Whiteside obviously comes with some baggage, but Portland's not really doing much.
Yeah.
They're struggling. They're not having a great season, even though Damian Lillard dropped 61 the other night.
I love him.
I love him, too. He's one of my favorite players in the league. You know, Whiteside, like I said, I mean, he has some baggage. There's some comportment issues there. But again, if you're going to go sort of the Clint Capella route, like I was talking about, it's a specific type of player. So first of all, philosophically, you have to decide, do you want that type of player who is a rim protector, rim runner, sort of closer to an old school center, offensively limited? Do you want that type of player in today's NBA? I do. Okay. If you do want that type of player, then you want sort of one of the best of the genre. And I would say that Whiteside still is. You know, he's a great rim protector.
Yeah, he is. I'm just trying. I pulled up his stats on Basketball Reference. He don't shoot from outside, like, at all.
No, that's not his game. Yeah. And there are guys like that. I mean, it's Hassan Whiteside, Andre Drummond, who's a little more than a little. He's a more offensively geared player than either Capella or Whiteside. But they're more of traditional centers. And so the question is, if you're the Celtics, are you better off having one of those guys than having three really good wings? You know, are you a better team? Even though you're less talented on paper, do the pieces fit? Because the one thing I believe in any sport about championship teams is that they have to have a versatility to them, and they have to have the ability to morph into a different type of team and multiple avenues to winning. And so if you have a guy like this, suddenly I think you have an avenue to winning that you don't have right now.
Yeah, and his, you know, the caller was saying, like, his mentality, like a bigger Marcus Smart, like junkyard dog type, you definitely get that with Hassan Whiteside.
Oh, yeah, he's bitchy.
Let's go to George in Boston on Gordon Hayward. Locked up here at line two there, B-Rob, please. Hello, George.
Hello, guys. Listen, I really think that Gordon Hayward is the key to the Celtics going anywhere this year. I don't understand all it. He gets assists. Last night he had 14 rebounds. Now I know he's not consistent enough. Some nights he looks like the player he was, and some nights he doesn't. But to me, he's the fourth star on that team, and if he really gets back to where he was, they're really going to be dangerous. Okay. And as far as the center goes, do you know what Theis and Kanter, the rebounds they average per game? Both of them. Do you know?
Off the top of my head, I do not.
Well, let me give you this number. 17 rebounds a game. All right? Kanter is 9-point-something, and Theis, and this is a week ago, was 7-point-something.
Yeah, they both played really well.
Yeah, George, on that, I'm going to let you go.
With
Cantor, as long as he's getting the minutes, you know, yeah. He's hovering around 20 minutes. Typically, the Celtics are winning these games.
I mean,
he's putting up those kind of numbers.
I thought Cantor was outstanding, particularly in the first half when he scored the 18 points. I think he had 6 offensive rebounds against the Lakers. I thought he was outstanding. He was a real difference maker in that game. He had the 6 offensive rebounds in the first half. He had 8 boards. He ended up finishing with 18-11. I think the Celtics can't ask for anything more than what they've gotten from Tice and Cantor. So no one is maligning those guys when we talk about adding a big. The question is, do you feel like that's enough to contend? Is that enough? Because let's remember now, there's something different about playing a team in a 7-game series versus bouncing around in the regular season. I think that we've seen over the years with Brad Stevens that his teams have an advantage during the regular season when you're just bouncing around facing different teams. They're going to be more well-prepared. They're going to play harder. And you see that. But if you get into a 7-game series against Milwaukee or Philadelphia, is it realistic to expect Cantor and Tice to play the way they're playing in the regular season?
What's next for the Celtics? It's the young phenom in New Orleans, Zion Williamson. We'll touch on him next here in the Sports Hub Celtics Show.
This is the Sports Hub Celtics Show. This is Jaylen Brown, and home of the Boston Celtics basketball, 98.5, the Sports Hub. It's an hour dedicated to your Celtics. Chris Gasper, Jim Murray, the Sports Hub Celtics Show on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Alley-oop Zion, laying it good from up top, Lonzo Ball. I think he's feeling it now, Daniel.
And here we go.
Ball, left corner, Frank, floated into Zion, Aldridge on him. Up top, Lonzo, stutter step, back to Zion. Oh my, step back three, left way! Swish! No! This is not happening!
Was it everything you dreamed of, your NBA debut, going out there in such a big arena? Was it what you dreamed of?
Yeah, it was everything I dreamed of, except for the losing part. Just the energy the crowd brought, the energy the city brought. It was electric, and I'm just grateful that they did that. So it was a dream come true to finally get out there, but at the end of the day, I did want to win, so I just got to look the next game.
All right, what's next for the Celtics? It's the big boy, Zion Williamson, who made his debut the other night in the loss to San Antonio and shined last night in a 113-106 loss to the Denver Nuggets, where he was in 21 minutes, getting limited minutes, and rightfully so, coming off this knee injury that's kept him out until this week. 15 points, 6 rebounds, and he had this freaky block that has lit up social media since last night. Yeah, I mean, it almost looked like he was like, I don't know, like photoshopped in or something like that. Yeah. He comes out of nowhere like, wow.
Yeah, my poor guy, Malik Beasley of Florida State, on the wrong end of that one.
But so Pelicans 0-2 already during the Zion era. So looking for their first win as they'll be hosting the Celtics tomorrow with tip off right around 6:00. You can catch it here on 98.5 The Sports Hub. But the kid looks like the real deal so far. But I just in gathering that sound, putting that together today, they have the nerdiest sounding broadcast team I've ever heard in my entire life. I think he's feeling it now, Daniel. Can I just hear the end clip of that?
I think he's feeling it now, Daniel.
And here we go.
And here we go. And so they just have like a color man down there who's just a comic book geek making those kind of references every single game now that they have Zion Williamson. I think he's feeling it now, Daniel. Zion once was as dominant as a Thanos snap tonight. Snap. Huzzah.
Here we go.
And here we go. Zion full Bruce Banner to full Hulk mode tonight. And here we go. He's feeling it now, Daniel.
Here we go.
Oh, and
really,
my God.
Sometimes you gather sound for these shows that we put together. You really, and I think we have great broadcast teams throughout the city. We're very lucky, and we should
are lucky,
because,
yeah,
you know, we're one of the, if not the crown jewels of sports cities in America. But when you hear some of the other broadcast teams throughout this great country of ours, holy crap, there are these guys have, I mean, you want a little flavor down there. I think it's New Orleans. That's a city with some swagger and some,
sure,
you know, and now that you have the, you know, one of the great young studs, you hopefully for the NBA and Zion Williamson, and you have these, he's feeling it now, Daniel.
He's like Thor. He has his hammer again.
He is throwing down his Thor hammer tonight, isn't he? And
he has Mjolnir.
You know, he does the hands like the Joker too. And here we go.
Why so serious?
Yeah. Why? He has an angry look on his face. Why so serious, Zion? Huzzah. What a performance by Zion against the Celtics tonight.
Yeah. It does sound a little bit like if Maz and I called the Pelicans game, I have to be honest.
But the other thing that was made about his debut in Mark Jackson and ESPN, because we live in the stupidest time alive now,
they were commenting
on his weight during the broadcast, and you know, the social media justice mob, got all over Mark Jackson, like, fire him, ESPN, shame, shame, don't body shame, raw. I think it's okay to say that the kid could maybe lose a couple of pounds, and I get it. Like, he's coming into the league late. He's dealt with this knee injury, but weight was kind of an issue.
At Duke,
you know,
and
so
it's one of the
he
biggest
blew out that shoe.
It.
I've never seen that before in my life.
Yep.
Maybe that's just poor manufacturing, but I think it's fair to say the kid could maybe lose a few, or he has to play himself into better shape.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't hear the Mark Jackson comments, but I mean, that was one of the things that scouts and stuff were saying about Zion coming out. There's some concern about his longevity with the weight that he's currently carrying. And look, it's the NBA. I mean, Charles Barkley went through the same thing. It's not like this is the first guy. I mean, there was a guy in the NBA, if you guys remember this guy, there was a guy in the NBA whose nickname was Hot Plate.
Who was Hot Plate?
Was it John Hot Plate Williams? Was that what it was? But I remember he was a center.
Hot Rod, maybe?
No, there was a guy who was Hot Plate.
Well, when I look at him, like, and I think the fair comp for him in terms of his ability and like who his body type is like Sean Kemp.
John Hot Plate Williams. I was correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nice.
Well,
yeah.
Sean Kemp, too, is who you don't want to end up turning into. Besides the fact he had like 25 children, but you know, just in terms of a weight being an issue like that, I can understand being a concern. I think it's fair to bring
up. Sean Kemp was just ahead of his time. Yeah, he was the Philip Rivers of his day.
Can I hear that clip one time from those nerds? I need to hear that again. I love these two. I need to hear more of them. This is why I need Zion to become a thing.
Yeah, I think he's feeling it now, Daniel.
I think he's feeling it now, Daniel.
And here we go.
He is performing like Iron Man tonight. Huzzah! What a performance by Zion.
Here we go.
As the
it's like he went from Prince Adam to He-Man.
As the Pelicans assemble on the floor, it's like the Avengers tonight. And here we go.
Here we go.
They are feeling it tonight, Daniel. That's what you have.
He's storming Castle Grayskull.
I love those two. I don't know who they are, but
I bet you one of those announcers owned the USS flag.
Oh, for sure. Yes, just like yours truly.
He is dominating like Bane tonight. Oh, what a wonderful villain he was in The Dark Knight Rises, wasn't he? Oh, I should be paying attention to the game. Have you seen the new Deadpool movie, Daniel?
Here we go.
Dominating like Guardians of the Galaxy tonight on the floor here at the Smoothie King Center. Here we go, Daniel. All right.
Star-Lord.
Yeah. With that, we'll move on from the Sports Hub Celtics show. It's going to be a loose final hour. If you want to continue to call in and talk Celtics, have at it, 617-779-0985. But it's Gasper Murray for 1 hour. But first, we have to give you the Sports Hub headlines.
I think he's feeling it now, Daniel.
And here we go. From the
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.